Please, sir, I want some more.
From Chicago, with our old styles in hand, this is Film Spotting After Hours. I'm Adam Kempinar.
Yeah, this is After Hours, dude. You gotta say it with some kind of like cool intonation.
After Hours.
After Hours.
I don't have anything known as cool intonation, Maddie.
That's right. Father of three. Cool.
Exactly.
Long gone. I'm Maddie Robinson. This is the, suffice it to say, long-awaited edition of Film Spotting After Hours. We do apologize. We want to make this a regular feature, but the fact of the matter is Film Spotting Enterprises has been pretty busy these last couple months. This week on the show, we've got a listener's choice review of Brief Encounter and excerpts from our Chicago meetup Q&A, which was held at the end of August.
Yeah.
But first, a little listener feedback. Now, Adam, on the last edition of After Hours, which I think was roughly about 2002, we read an email from Jamie in South Korea. I think he was 14 years old.
And actually, we don't know if it's a he or a she.
We don't, yeah.
But we'll go with he
but
for now.
Jamie wanted to know, are there some great movie choices that weren't R-rated?
Yeah, because usually those are the films we're talking about.
Exactly, you know. And we are pretty out of it in terms of kids.
We're adults, though. What do you expect?
Exactly.
We're going to choose adult movies.
I took a 13-year-old to the OTB the other day. I had no idea they had an age limitation. But a lot of listeners did write in and meet our challenge.
Yes, they certainly did, and we'll start with this one. Hi, guys. Our 13-year-old daughter is homeschooled, and movies are a big part of her education. I asked her for recommendations of movies she loves that she would want to share with other teens, and they are, in no particular order, Seven Samurai, Rear Window, It Happened One Night, Spirited Away, and Spartacus. I hope Jamie in South Korea is listening to this After Hours. We got some good choices here. The emailer goes on, we limited this to five or it would be a really long email. She's introduced these to some of her more traditionally schooled friends who have been raised on more recent Hollywood blockbusters. The most fun for me is the conversations we have about the movies, the settings, the references, and the shared experiences. I am Spartacus, that's Tracy Wilson, mom of Mackenzie, in Mullica Hill, New Jersey. And just for you, Maddie, Mullica Hill is near Philly.
Look, I think at this point, Mackenzie is probably qualified to host this show.
Exactly.
I think we should have her on as a guest here.
I want to go to the home school run by Tracy Wilson, because that sounds like fun.
In defense of my public school education, I was shown Spartacus in my history class.
But not Seven Samurai, I'm guessing.
Actually, I was in my Japanese Appreciation Week in eighth grade.
Small town Minnesota getting it done. After all, I'm shocked. But that was a great email. Thanks for writing in, Tracy.
All right, well, let's move on to Clayton from Lawrence, Kansas. He writes in, hey, as a teenager myself, I felt the plight of those young moviegoers, unable to sit at the adult table and watch the R-rated movies, but wanting more than a typical Hollywood fare aimed at teens. I present a few of my favorite non-R-rated movies that have a little more substance while easily keeping the audience entertained. Rescue Dawn, not R-rated.
I guess not.
Wow. Serenity, The Bourne Series, The Fountain, Breach, any Pixar film. I completely agree with that, and I can completely get behind this next one. 13 Days. I also find that television holds a large selection of gripping, entertaining, but not fully adult fare, including Arrested Development, Firefly, and Battlestar Galactica. Hope this helps. Well, I have to admit, Adam, I know vaguely Arrested Development, but we're movie guys. So as far as TV, I'm of no help there. I mean, I think MASH is a pretty good series. They still they still show that.
That's about your speed there, Maddie. MASH, nicely done. But definitely some great picks there from Clayton. And this one from Eileen Hunter from Long Beach, California is very good as well. I'm listening to your podcast at work and had to make the following suggestions of good movies for teens. I don't have a list of five. I just wanted to suggest this one. Harold and Maude. This was my favorite film when I was a teen. I think it taught me that it was okay to make non-traditional choices and that Cat Stevens actually has a decent song catalog, without a doubt. I don't want to weigh the film down with too much meaning because I think the appeal of it is too fragile to survive excessive praise. I just love it. It makes me happy to watch, and it made my life as a teen a bit easier. Well, said.
Not only should you watch Harold and Maude, but you also need to sit down with your vinyl edition of Tea for the Tillerman. Please.
Yeah.
All right, well, Scott Yarbrough writes in from Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. My answer would be this. See older Hays Production Code era films. The entire Hitchcock canon, anything by Houston and Hawks, and yes, he adds, Curtiz. Well, no, I wouldn't check out the entire, you know, Hays Code era catalog of films.
You wouldn't?
No. I mean, there's a lot of schlock there that the Hays Code dictated that material. I mean, look, I'm not going to make anybody sit through Cleopatra.
No, but there's some good films there. Obviously, that's a good starting point if you're looking for movies that are going to be pretty safe for children, for teens.
Exactly. But what about the attention span? I do need to ask this. I mean, we get this question all the time. Black and white films, they didn't have Sesame Street back then. They didn't have their attention spans whittled down to these sort of like 1 minute, 90-second blocks at all times. I mean, really, can we push younger viewers to sit through the Philadelphia Story?
Yes.
Can we really?
I mean, we should.
I mean, wouldn't they have more appreciation?
This is how we untrain them.
Look, I'm playing completely devil's advocate, but wouldn't they have more appreciation for it if they were to come to it, say, at a later age?
Maybe so, but why not get them started early and maybe we can undo MTV?
See, I'm just worried that they're going to start to reject all this stuff.
No, I don't think so. Not if they pick the right movies, and there are certainly good choices there from Curtiz, from Hawks, from Hitchcock. I know you agree with that, certainly. So check out those movies. That really is a good place to start. But there are also some great choices here in this email from Steve Kimes, Portland, Oregon. You seemed a bit at sea figuring out movies for teens, so being the father of teens and a pastor, I thought I'd help you out. These films aren't necessarily about teens, yet reflect on themes that are significant for them. Number 5, Schindler's List, communicates the horror of genocide and dehumanization in a popularized way, and also gives us a brilliant portrayal of a hero who was just doing what little he could. Number 4, I love this one, The Sure Thing, a teen sex movie without sex. That sounds pretty lame, but frankly, this is one of the funniest movies ever. I think that's a Rob Reiner movie. I could be wrong, but an early movie with John Cusack in that one. Very good. I think Tim Robbins has a small role in it, too. It's a road movie. Number 3, Saving Private Ryan. What does it mean to be a soldier? This is an issue that all teens need to deal with, and we are introduced to the topic by putting us in the place of a couple excellent ones. Number 2, Little Miss Sunshine.
Wow.
Comes under the heading of, you think your family is dysfunctional? Deals with serious issues like despair and rejection, but also shows how a caring family can sometimes be the only support one needs, even if you're not sure you can stand them. And number 1, Clueless. Popularity and cliques in high school, and a really funny look at the issues. 5 good choices there from Steve.
Very good. And Joshua Powers writes in, I was reminded of an entry in Roger Ebert's Answer Man column where a middle school teacher asked for quality recommendations he can safely give to his class. We're not going to read them all off here,
no,
but we will link to them on our website, filmspotting.net, if you want to go check those out. A couple of them that were in there that I can really get behind: George Washington, Holes, I think is a nice film, The Secret of Rowan Inish.
Great.
And In America.
In America. Those two would be the ones that stick out for me, In America and The Secret of Rowan Inish. But again, we will put that link to that list on our site in the notes for this After Hours show at filmspotting.net. And we hope Jamie in South Korea and his or her friends is listening to the show and got some good picks there. They can go to the library or the video store and dive into. We really do appreciate all the emails. I wish we could get to more because we received a ton of them on this topic. So again, thanks to everyone. And with that, Maddie, we should transition into our listener's choice review of Brief Encounter.
Yeah, the
film
Neil,
from David Lean.
Yes, the Neil Cameron Honorary Film Spotting Listener Choice Review.
That's
we need a trophy we can send out electronically.
Like, yeah, Neil.
Be a PDF.
I'm a happily married woman. Or rather, I was until a few weeks ago. This is my whole world. And it's enough. Or rather, it was until a few weeks ago.
Can I help you?
Oh, no, please, it's only something in my eye.
Pulling your eyelid down as far as it'll go.
And then blowing your nose. Please let me look. I happen to be a doctor.
That's very kind of you.
Oh, turn around the light, please.
That's how it all began. Just through me getting a little piece of grit in my eye.
Are you going to pictures this afternoon?
Yes.
How extraordinary, so am I.
The trailer there, of course, for the David Lean 1945 film Brief Encounter. And here was Neil's explanation, his persuasion for us, his argument for why we should check this movie out. He says, admittedly, everyone in the world and his dog has probably already seen this film 17 times over, but I somehow made it to my late 20s without ever watching it. So I figure there may be other unfortunate souls out there who could do with a point in the right direction, and we are two of those unfortunate souls who needed to see this movie. An absolute classic. Possibly the most English film ever made, and if it doesn't get a little dusty in the room when you're watching this, you are clearly some kind of weird, emotionless replicant from the future. Very simply, Maddie, I want to know, I'm testing you, are you some weird emotionless replicant from the future, or did it get a little dusty watching Brief Encounter?
I'm so happy we get to review this film. I do love the received pronunciation dialect. I think it's the only way to hear Noel Coward's great language. I am not a mutant. You prick me, I bleed. Let me tell you the circumstances under which I watched this film. I had just sat down on an airplane after attending my sister's absolutely gorgeous wedding.
Oh, no.
It was 3 days of spending time with family and friends. And look, this is not Oprah's couch, so I won't go into details. But I got to meet and spend some time with someone pretty special. And here I am on the plane, coming down, feeling a little sad, sort of cursing geography, if you will, wishing Chicago was a lot closer to Denver, yada, yada, yada. You all can fill in the blanks. I turn on Brief Encounter on my little portable DVD player, which everybody makes fun of, but I think it's endearing. And after about 10 minutes, I had to shut the thing off.
Really?
Because it got everything exactly, exactly right. And it was just way too powerful for me to take. And I think, you know, every now and then, films take something from reality and they bottle it and they convey it so perfectly on screen. And when I say something from reality, I mean just that, an intangible feeling or sort of an emotional state that words can't describe. Bergman, of course, the master of this.
Mm-hmm.
But so is a film like Meatballs. And this is why I love Film Spotting. I can talk about Bergman and go to Meatballs in about 2 seconds. It's a film we talked about a couple weeks ago. That film manages to bottle that feeling you had as a kid that summers were eternal, that months lasted years, that days were as long as weeks. Brief Encounter captures that sort of feeling that you can't place any words on, but you know you love it. And that's that moment of falling in love.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately for both protagonists in this film, they're falling in love with someone other than their spouses. And it's just played beautifully. It sort of renders all the romantic comedies we've seen through the years as rather trivial, or at the very least, derivative.
Yeah, no, it really is a good film, and I enjoyed it. But I will start to get a little nervous if you begin asking me questions about walking in a desert and turtles on the ground, because maybe I am a replicant after all. As I said, I did very much like the film, but it didn't ever get dusty for me. And believe it or not, not for my wife either, Sarah, who I watched it with. Maybe, and I know this is disgusting, maybe we're just too happily married, Maddie, to enjoy these people in their really kind of sad, depressing lives where they feel this need to make this connection.
Wait,
with
are you suggesting that you are living right now sort of these lives of quiet desperation?
I'm
going to keep you away from these train stations.
No, I'm actually suggesting
the opposite.
No,
you are on the precipice, my friend. You are on the precipice. I am diagnosing you right now.
No, I really can't explain it. I don't know if that's the reason, or maybe it's just that, you know, the movie never convinced me that either of these people were necessarily doomed to a life of misery without each other, and I actually think that that's not the point.
That's not the point.
I didn't feel all that crushed by the weight of it at the end. I don't think that's what David Lean or Noel Coward were trying to convince me of, so I didn't feel all that terribly depressed by
it. You and Sarah, of course, you could recognize the joy of this courting.
Without a doubt.
Of this fledgling relationship.
Yeah.
You tried to convince me of this in American Teen. I think it was here more fully realized.
Without a doubt, sure.
Exactly. I mean, these two people, I just absolutely loved it. I was completely enveloped by this. It reminded me of, you know, those times when you're coming home from that concert late at night and you're on the train with your best gal or with your best friends, or you've stayed up all night and the coffee shop is closing and it's going to kick you out. You want those moments to last forever.
Sure.
You want to be able to keep your arm around that person forever, but you just can't. The fact of the matter is, it's got to end. And I think that's what this film nailed. I mean, it is absolutely delightful.
Yeah, it does get all of that right. And I think part of the reason it has that effect is just the cinematic quality of it. There's a great use of narration here, which you know, we've talked about how narration doesn't work a lot of times. But this voiceover here, Celia Johnson's voiceover, it really shares her inner feelings. It gives us something to consider and chew on, and it adds texture, not just information, not redundant, adds texture to the story.
Because the fact of the matter is this, I mean, the wonderful conceit of this film is that she is confessing.
Mm-hmm.
She's confessing.
That's it. Except it's all in her head.
She has turned the interrogator's light on her. And we actually see this played out through the film. There's a really sort of, I call it the Harry Lime light from Third Man.
Yeah.
There's a very sort of bright white light that covers, I think cynically you could probably say it's probably washing out her complexion and Trevor Howard's complexion at the same time. But what I think it served to do was actually put her in the interrogator's spotlight,
mm-hmm.
which she has turned on herself.
That's it.
She wants to confess this. She's never going to be able to confess this. Of course, you know, Bridges from Madison County covers the exact same ground where she wrote it all down. I don't know if she's writing this down. You don't know until the very end what she's doing, although all along you know she's confessing it to her husband.
That's it. And that's very effective here. The structure of the film with those bookends is great. I like the fact that, you know, her husband isn't a total dolt. We understand why she is allured by someone else, but at the same time he's not portrayed in a negative way.
Let's get to what we absolutely hate about 80s and 90s romantic comedies. It's the fact that the other guy is always the dolt.
Right.
He's always the stiff. Every now and then maybe he's Bill Pullman with a little bit of charisma,
sure.
But they've never broken out of that mold. It's always to say you need to end up with Ryan Reynolds.
Right.
You need to end up with Brad Pitt. Well, look, that's not the fact. That's not the way life works.
No, it's not. And I also enjoyed it just on a personal level too, because I now finally got all of the references people made to Atonement when Atonement came out. If you look at Milford, their encounters there, and even the nurses walking through the town made me think of Briny. But all of those moments, the one moment we get between Keira Knightley and James McAvoy where they get to come back and meet each other, that is the brief encounter of this film, kind of on screen in Atonement. You definitely see that film had to be somewhat of an inspiration maybe for Joe Wright anyway. So I like that. But really my favorite thing about the movie and the thing that jumped out for me the most is that I loved how Noel Coward and David Lean played this unrequited love affair out in this larger context where we have all these supporting players,
right.
And their stories occurring simultaneously. You have Albert and Myrtle, the barmaid, the saucy barmaid, and you know the attendant. The security guy played by Stanley Holloway from the Lavender Hill Mob, of course.
Right, exactly. And what I love about those sort of supporting characters is that we don't get a resolution to all their relationships. They don't walk hand in hand into the sunset. Again, another era that I think a modern-day production would probably put on this.
Yeah, but what really jumped out for me is that those moments seem like they're there just for comic relief, and to some extent they are, but this relationship between Celia Johnson and Trevor Howard, it seems so life-changing and huge and momentous. The whole story is built mm-hmm. around this encounter and this unrequited affair, but this dramatic affair is going on right under the noses of all these other people, and they never pay attention to it.
Right.
We never actually see these worlds collide in any way. The trains keep coming, the world keeps turning, despite what seems to be so momentous, this affair happening right under their noses. I just love that. And of course, we get the great ending where then one of these periphery characters does intrude on their world and thwarts their chance for that big, dramatic, romantic send-off. I mean, the way Trevor Howard finally gets out of Celia Johnson's life just couldn't be any better. It has to be, because of their
exactly.
situations, it has to be undramatic. It has to be just a simple goodbye, as if they mean nothing to each other. I love that.
And then... Has your train?
Yes, I know.
Oh, aren't you coming with us?
No, I go in the opposite direction. My practice is in Chile.
Oh, I see.
I'm a general practitioner at the moment.
Dr. Harvey's going out to Africa next week. Oh, how thrilling.
The train now arriving at platform 4 is the 5:40 for Chile, Lee Green, and Langwood.
I must go.
Yes, you must.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, thank you to Neil Cameron in Oxford, England, for bringing this film to us here at Film Spotting. If you want to bring your film, if you want us to review your favorite film, or I think it would just be absolutely hilarious if Adam and I were to review Joe versus the Volcano, then what you need to do is to donate to Film Spotting. For every $10 you donate, your name does get entered into the Film Spotting hat. And we do have some other winners here, Adam. Why don't you read off these winners here of some shirts and mugs?
Yeah, we'll start with those winners and then get to the grand prize. They're the next Listener's Choice winner. We start with a Film Spotting t-shirt going to Michael Kelly from Castle Gregory, Kerry, Ireland. Congratulations, Michael. Another Film Spotting shirt to Chris Clace, I hope I'm saying that right, from San Diego, California. And we're going to give out a Film Spotting mug to Daniel Watkins from Peterborough, Cambridgeshire,
All right. In
the UK.
Nicely done. Now, our next Listener's Choice is going to be provided by whom, and we hope, we are going to try and stick to this schedule. Now, with the fall movie schedule, we are running pretty hectic here, but hopefully in about 4 weeks, we'll be able to review a film suggested by
Adam Dorfman, the Dorf Dorfman, to quote Fletch, to paraphrase Fletch, from right here in Chicago. Adam gets to be our next Listener's Choice winner. So, Adam, send us three movies to choose from, three movies you absolutely want to hear us take apart or praise to the hilt on Film Spotting After Hours. We look forward to that email, feedback@filmspotting.net. And, of course, to our other winners, please do send me an email as well, feedback@filmspotting.net, and we will get those prizes out to you.
All right, now it's time for a special edition, Film Spotting After Hours.
Yeah.
We're going to try and provide some excerpts from the Film Spotting Meetup, which was a huge success. I thought maybe 10 people were going to show up at this bar here in Chicago. We packed the room, and we did a little bit of a live Q&A there that night. You also played.
I also played
guitar.
Yeah, I played guitar for everyone, and we played Hacky Sack later, and it was good times.
It's all good down to the quad.
But no, it was. It was really a fun night, of course, and you know, we want to thank everyone who did help us put together that evening and who came out. And we did have this Q&A. We're going to play you just a few of the question and answers here. I don't know, Maddie, if people are going to be able to tell. I mean, you had a little bit of fun that night with the open bar.
I did.
Yeah.
Why not?
Why not?
Well, it's not a cash bar.
It's not
a
cash bar.
They call it an open bar for a reason.
I don't think you were alone. Many people did indulge in the bar. It was a good time had by all. You can hear the evidence for yourself. Let's go ahead and dive into the questions. We really appreciate everyone actually taking some time to fill out a few questions for us here, and we'll try to make this relatively painless and actually try to be insightful. I don't know if we can pull that off, but we want you to actually answer or to ask the questions, if you will. So if I call out your name or kind of call out your question, if you will actually come up and ask it, that would be wonderful. If you're too shy, that's fine. We'll go ahead and read it. So Maddie, we're going to start with this one, and we're going to invite the listener up. We didn't get a name, but the question is in regard to us, whether or not we really do not talk to each other before we record a show. Who asked that question? Who wants to take credit for it? All right, come on up.
Hello, I'm Michelle in Chicago. And my question was, do you guys really not talk to one another before recording, or are you brilliant at expressing your shock and outrage at one another's picks and critiques?
That's actually very true. That's very true. We don't, and it's very, very hard sometimes. You know, we will give hints, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times when we walk out of, I think The Happening, we both pretty much knew what a disaster that was.
Sorry, Scott. Sorry, Scott Tobias.
And but no, we honest to God, that's what makes the show really work, is that we, you know, we have prepared things we want to say about the film, but we never really know what the other thinks about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's where the shock, the genuine fun shock and outrage comes from, is not knowing what the other person thinks. And you know, that's why when, you know, I love a movie, for example, like American Teen, and Maddie doesn't, you know, we get worked up about it because we're shocked,
yeah.
You know, so.
You were so fucking wrong about that film. I mean, the thing is, and this is the damn thing about it. It's like, I actually.
Next question.
I respect him. Like, I do. See, the thing is, it's like, I respect what
don't
Adam
lie
has
to them.
Say. No, I really do. Okay. I think people would be surprised to hear that. But the thing is why we don't fight that often is that we actually do respect where we're coming from. We're coming from very different places. With that film, I was so aghast that someone I think that is so smart and discerning could be completely floored by that. I mean,
is that like the backhanded compliment of the year?
I'm waiting for the cults to come to your door because I worry for your children at that point. But.
Thank you, Maddie. Let's move on to the next one. This is about how the show has moved from being a podcast to a public radio show. Who wants to take credit for that question?
Colin from Chicago.
Here's your question if you need to see it.
Well, I was going to ask, obviously the show's grown from being sort of a homegrown living room type of thing to being on public radio. I was hoping you guys could elaborate on the history of the show and how it's grown and, you know, stayed as professional and consistent as it has. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the question, Colin. You know, maybe Joe would actually be a good person to ask about that. As I said, we wouldn't be on WBEZ's airwaves, and also Virginia Beach, Virginia. Thank you. We're on their affiliate too now. If it wasn't for Joe, but you know, it's funny. I was thinking about this today because I think about, again, Jason, my buddy, coming out. The second the second or third episode of Film Spotting, Cinecast at the time, actually, going old school for you, Sam and I recorded in Jason's apartment. And don't ask me why. It wasn't our normal recording spot, but we needed a spot. And we recorded in his apartment. And I remember sitting downstairs at his kitchen table recording the show. And he and one of his buddies were upstairs watching TV. And I had to go up and tell him, guys, now you have to watch TV in silence. Because the mics will pick up your talking. So for the next half hour, you just have to shut up. And for some reason, they actually did it. They didn't just tell me to piss off and go away. So, you know, that's the way the show kind of used to be. But in terms of, you know, the production, I mean, again, you know, you could talk to Joe about this after we get off the stage here, but nothing's really changed. Nothing at all. I mean, we were on WBEZ's airwaves for a lot of years with us producing the show. The first year and a half or so with us producing it the same way we always produced it, sitting at a conference table with our two microphones and our little $75 mixer, and we managed to pull it off and make it sound like a professional show. And now we do actually, the past 30 shows or so have been recording at Chicago Public Radio. But I don't think in terms of the structure of the show or you know, what we're bringing to it, anything has really changed. The only thing that has changed is Joe, his assistant.
I think the structure of the show has helped. That's what helped make the transition. I think early on there were so many podcasts, which was basically, you know, two 25-year-olds sitting around going, this is what I think about this, this is what I think about this. The genius about you and Sam, what you decided to do was say, hey, we're going to actually put some work behind this, and we're going to put out the same format every single week so people can keep expecting the same intelligent conversation. And I think that's what has helped the show. I think that's what has helped it continue where it is, and you guys need all the credit for that.
Thank you. I look forward to hearing what you have to say about this next question, too. Who asked the question about, even though you addressed it to me, the one about how the dynamic is different? Sandy, go ahead and come on up.
Hi, this is this is Sandy from Chicago. This is mainly for Adam, although I guess Maddie could address it too. How has the dynamic changed between you and Maddie than it was between you and Sam?
I think the only thing that's changed is that it's back to where it was when Sam and I started, which was when we were both in the same room having a great time talking about movies together. And you know, as he moved to Milwaukee and we were doing the show, it was becoming harder and harder to put it together. And we were, for 7 or 8 months, we did the show talking to each other by phone. And most people didn't know that. And the fact that we pulled that off, I think, you know, is a testament to what we had with the show. But the fact is, we weren't having as much fun doing the show when you're talking over the phone. And you can't actually see the other person react, you know, and really kind of read their body language and jump in and have a good time. It was becoming more like work instead of the fun job that it was. And I think it's back to just, you know, we love sitting down. As stressful as it is to put the show together, yeah, we love getting together on whatever night or nights we do get together and record the show, and we just have a blast doing it. So that, I think, is the best part about it. I also think that, you know, the thing that Maddie brings, though, besides actually being here in Chicago, is that you know, Sam was better than me about being a contrarian. You know, he cared less than I did about what people thought about what he had to say or whether or not he was, like, criticizing a movie that maybe everyone loved. Maddie genuinely doesn't care. Like, Maddie is he's the most fearless guy I know when it comes to, like, he'll absolutely tear down any sacred cow. He'll express ignorance of something that, like, some film geeks would be like, oh, my God, how could you not know that film? Maddie doesn't care. He just does not care, and that actually is good. That's refreshing to have on air when you have someone like me sitting across there that's, like, terrified I'm going to, you know, offend someone with something stupid I say. It's great to have Maddie to balance that out.
God, so, you are ridiculous. You pander.
I do. What can I say? Hey, we have all these people here in the room because I pander every week.
I mean, this is people listening in Film Spotting Nation, a world, actually. It's ridiculous, this scene right now. I mean, there are at least, I mean, scores and scores, teeming mass of humanity,
yeah,
that I think can only be described as beautiful and yet a tad bit dangerous. So, I mean, this is incredible. This really is incredible.
It is.
We're coming. I don't think, did you set up the show at all that we're coming from the Alive One bar?
No, we'll do
Chicago?
That. We'll do that when we actually do the After Hours episode, frame this.
Oh, yeah. So I ruined something.
No, you didn't ruin anything.
Oh,
it's all good. This one from Lisa, who is now in Ann Arbor, but who I met actually out in San Diego. It seems like a lot of reviewers stop liking movies after a while. They've seen the same story many times. Do you still enjoy them at the same level you did when you started, Maddie?
No.
No?
No. No. Yes, I totally do. I totally do. If I didn't have a love of the profession and have a love of the industry, I wouldn't keep doing it. Look, I come from a very critical mind. Everything I come from is from a place of passion. I honestly believe I want this to be different. I want something to happen here. I think something has fallen. But no, I actually look forward to most movies that I watch, and I watch a lot of movies. That's the only thing that's changed since I joined the show.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you. I nothing's really changed. I mean, I think sometimes when you're watching a movie, you know, you start to think about, what am I going to say about this movie? It kind of gets you out of the, you know, the space of just enjoying the film for what it is. But you can get over
that
pretty quick.
But you never want a movie to fail.
No, you never.
Want a movie to fail.
No, that's absolutely true. Thank you to everyone again for coming out and for your great questions. Everyone who asked a question that got answered, please see Sarah. She's got your lovely film spotting swag, your door prize for coming tonight and asking a question. And again, we really do appreciate all of your support on the show. It's just amazing to actually have you guys show up like this, and you know, all the feedback we get every week, it's just incredible. So thank you again for everybody coming out.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
He's got... I'm not touching it.
I don't think I can run for president anymore.
No, you can't.
I really don't.
No, the world has heard that. I have it all on tape somewhere. Again, thank you to everyone who made that night possible. And thanks to everyone for tuning in to this edition of Film Spotting After Hours. I do hope that we will get to another one sooner rather than later. For Film Spotting, I'm Adam Kempinar.
And I'm Maddie Robinson. Thanks for listening.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.